Today on Movie While Us, we talk about I Saw the TV Glow and Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
Woohoo!
Greetings. I don't know how we're going to do this.
Why?
We don't have a lot of time and we've got...
Well, you're going to have to be efficient.
So we've got a lot to talk about.
So let's jump into...
Netflix
recommendations.
Okay, Netflix recommendations.
No banter. Joel, just a reminder, if it hasn't happened already, go check out Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles.
Yes,
we want to keep reminding people because oftentimes you might hear this in the car and think, oh, I knew there was something I was trying to remember. So Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles, 27th until the 30th of June. We are not being paid by IFLA to tell you about their
We
just love this film festival and we think you should go.
I'm going to go one step forward and say I'll pay for your tickets if you don't like the movie you watch. Just let me know, I'll Venmo you.
I will back that.
Oh my God, you guys.
Well, actually, it's half your money as well.
I know.
So you're kind of backing it.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Let's get straight into business because we've got a lot to talk about. So let's start off with our usual segment of I can't find anything to watch on video on demand. And we're going to give you a couple of streaming picks. And hopefully, if you can't figure out when you want to watch, one of these movies will tickle your fancy.
Okay, I can go first. I'm not doing a movie. I am doing a show, which is on Amazon Prime, and it is the third season of Clarkson's Farm. This is the great, great show following Jeremy Clarkson, who is an infamous journalist, car enthusiast, and his trials and tribulations as he is in the fourth year of his running his farm in England in the Cotswolds, which is an area in Oxfordshire. I can't believe the show gets better and better every season, but it really does. It has the great regular appearances by all the people who work on the farm and work with Jeremy Clarkson, and the trials and tribulations of working with the councils and how difficult it is to farm. It's educational, it's fun, it's entertaining. This is just one of the best shows on TV.
Now, I will say that I've been a huge fan of Clarkson for years through his work on Top Gear, his writing. He is a controversial character if ever there was one.
Yeah.
So I would say put your thoughts on Clarkson aside just to give the show a go, because Rashmi, you're not a huge
fan of Jeremy Clarkson.
He's arrogant.
He's a step down from Piers Morgan in my mind. He's not far away from Piers Morgan, who I don't like.
Yeah, he has a very specific brand to his humor. It can be very acerbic, and he says controversial things. So put that aside if you can, just to give
this
the show
a delightful
shot.
This is a delightful show. Yeah, love this. Clarkson's Farm Season 3 on Amazon Prime. Yes, D.
My suggestion is a no-fail movie. Everybody should watch this if you haven't already. You probably have. It's the movie A Simple Favor, which came out...
That's one of Joe's favorites.
Yeah, it came out in 2018. It's from Paul Feig, who directed Bridesmaids, and he directed Spy, and he directed... what else did he direct? He directed The Heat, and... oh gosh! The less you know about this movie.
Yeah, I was going to say this is a different flavor of Paul Feig. If those kind of comedy capers don't tickle your fancy, don't be worried. This is actually a very different strain of Paul Feig, I would say.
It is, and part of it is, well, it's always funny, but it's also like a murder mystery, and it's like you can't tell who are the good guys, who are the bad guys. It's single cross and double cross and triple cross and quadruple cross, and it's got a great cast. Anna Kendrick is in it, Blake Lively is in it, Henry Golding is in it. This is a movie which will keep you on your toes.
Yes.
You will enjoy the F out of seeing this movie. A simple favor, it's on Netflix. Do yourself a favor. If you haven't seen it, you will not regret it.
And for all my fashionista friends, this Anna Kendrick has one of the best wardrobes in this
Blake
movie.
Lively.
Love. Anna Kendrick. I like Anna Kendrick's.
We'll have to look back, but I'm pretty sure it was my favorite movie that year.
I think it was. Like, yeah. I love this movie.
I love, great choice, Yazdi.
Joe.
I am going to, I'm in two minds here. I'm going to go ahead and pick a really easy choice, which is if you haven't somehow managed to watch the Conjuring movies, one and two, both of them come back with part three, Conjuring the Devil Made Me Do It, which we haven't seen, but Conjuring 1 and Conjuring 2. And, you know, we have a couple of friends who have asked to do kind of scary movie night with us. I think we should have a Conjuring night.
Yes. Yes, are you up for it?
No, the lady on the cupboard still scares me. I'm sorry.
I just said, be careful of the clap, clap, clap once you're done with that. But it was scary.
That's one scary ass movie.
It really is.
It is. These are kind of horrors that are fun, but they're because they don't kind of stay with you too long after you leave the movie theater, even though the ride home does have you kind of looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
So, I'm not a fan of horror as a genre in the sense of, I go out and watch every scary movie I can. I'm not that guy, but there are some horror movies which are just fabulously well crafted and entertaining. They're polished to a fine sheen, and The Conjuring falls into that. We first were exposed to The Conjuring at South by Southwest, where we saw the very first movie, I think, with the audience, and the director, and even it was so much. You know, kind of giddy fun. If you have to watch this movie on an airplane, that's kind of my go-to place to watch a really, really scary movie is on a brightly lit airplane ride to somewhere where you're surrounded by people. You know, you're not in any sort of danger from the malevolent malevolence that's being portrayed in the movies. So, Conjuring 1, Conjuring 2, and Conjuring Part 3, which I guess I should check out as well if I'm brave enough. Yeah. I've got a plane ride coming up. Maybe I'll watch it then. So, Rashmi, your pick was?
Clarkson's Farm Season 3 and 1 and 2.
Yazdi, you had?
Paul Feig's deliciously lovely film, A Simple Favor on Netflix.
Delightfully naughty movie. And my pick is The Conjuring movies, The Conjuring Collection. I believe they come to Netflix in early June. Okay, let's get into business then. Let's first start with the movie I Saw the TV Glow. So,
Yazdi.
Yeah, so this is the second film from director Jane Schonbrunn. They first made a movie called We Are All Going to the World's Fair in 2021. And this is the second movie from this filmmaker. It stars Justice Smith, who we've seen in a few movies, Bridget Lundy Payne, and Ian Foreman. Jane Schonbrunn is the writer and director. And the one-liner for this movie is, two teenagers bond over their love of a supernatural TV show, but it is mysteriously canceled. I should say this movie is being released by A24, which was the main reason why I went to see it. What did you guys think of I Saw the TV Glow?
Okay, I always get so excited when I see A24 is behind a movie. You know, Yazdi, we're all big fans of A24 because they just know how to pick them. Them along, I think, with companies like Neon, right? They kind of are neck and neck for us. So I was very excited when we got the screening for this one. Eagerly sat in my seat. And I don't know what I watched. And I came home and I went on Wikipedia and I tried to look at the plot, and I don't remember seeing any of what I read in the movie. And so I'm sitting here scratching my head because this feels like someone's first year film school project, and I don't know what to make of it. I know what it's supposed to be. And I know what I watched with my eyes, but I don't know what the hell I watched.
Joe?
I freaking loved this movie.
I knew you were going to say that.
I didn't.
I was going to say, my God. I knew you were going to be like, what the hell?
No, this was a very frustrating experience here because, in fact, So when we leave these, when we have these screenings at press, and you know they're looking for instant feedback.
Yeah.
I literally didn't know what to say to the press person, because you know I very much subscribe to that. If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And sometimes as critics, we have to kind of give our minds when we don't like something, and that can be a little awkward to somebody who's there looking kind of for some positive reaction for PR. So my interaction was very clumsy. I was like, I don't understand this movie. I said, there's something there clearly for somebody, and it's seemingly well reviewed here. The critics review on the Tomatometer is 84%.
Mine's showing 90.
I found this movie just a chore to get through.
Yeah.
It plodded along. I didn't really understand what it was about. You know, there's some nice kind of character moments, but yeah, it was not for me at all. Yazdi. I'm terrified you're going to love this one in some way.
This is what I wrote on my letterboxed. I just did not get this.
Okay. And
I'm not proud of it, but that's the truth. Yeah. I just don't understand this film.
And yeah.
This is exactly what I wrote. This will resonate for you, because I wrote, I've been reading other reviews here, and it seems like they are all talking about some other film different from the one I watched.
Right.
But I guess this film is also cinema, and, you know, there's that. So I watch A24 just by default, and, you know, I'm afraid this movie is not Civil War, or it's not Love Lies Bleeding, or it's not Zero Dark Thirty, or any of those A24 stellar movies. I think this movie might be closer to Dix the Musical, also an A24 film.
Right.
But I did not hate it. The whole time I was watching the movie, I felt like I was trying to play a game for which I didn't know the rules, right? I'm like, there's something here. I'm missing it. And then, like you, when I went back and read the reviews, I understand it's about isolation. I understand it's about the trans experience, which there is, now that I think back a lot, maybe there are some little clues here and there. But the, you know, the last 20 minutes of the movie are effective, because I don't think you need to know the clue to the puzzle, but it's essentially about somebody who is kind of stifled and kind of are stuck being who they are when they want to be something else, and the horrible implication of that, right? If you go through your whole life denying who you want to be, then you become a shell of a human being. That's my takeaway, but that's my takeaway after reading the reviews. So since the movie is so praised and everybody else seems to love it, I think what looks like, and I don't mean to be unkind, but I think what looks like haphazard filmmaking has to be intentional. Like, there is a whole bit set in the 80s with
it's a show, right? It's a show within, it's a show. The movie is based on two friends, or two people who come together who have a love of a show. And so they've gone to great lengths to film this show that is from the 80s.
Right. But yeah.
That's neither here nor there in my mind, right? I don't know whether it's trying to be some sort of like supernatural coming of age movie, or whether it's about, is it all a dream, or is it all about like some parallel experience that this young boy is having as he grows up? There's just not enough to hang on to in terms of a narrative to be able to piece together from scene to scene what's actually happening. I mean, it's well acted, there's a quote here from someone called Corey Coleman, who's from Double Toasted. He said, I mean, no disrespect to the director or anyone who likes this movie, but this is one of the most boring films I've ever seen in a long time. That resonates with me in some way. It's intriguing, but it was dull.
I wasn't bored so much as puzzled. I'm like, what am I meant to take from this? What am I meant to take from this? And it just, like I said, the 20 minutes, last 20 minutes resonated at some level, but that whole thing with the TV show, I still don't know. These filmmakers loved Buffy, the Vampire Slayer movie, the show, and then that show that they're watching, it's called The Pink something.
The Pink Opaque.
The Pink Opaque has some parallels to Buffy. I've never watched Buffy, so I don't know. But if you're telling me this is supposed to represent the trans experience of somebody who is denying their true identity, I would be totally game for that film. I would be 100% game for that film, but this film was not giving me that. And maybe I'm just the wrong audience for it. Or maybe this should have come with a little manual, or maybe I should have read up a little bit about it. But yeah, I didn't get
this. Well, you shouldn't have to do so much hard work to enjoy a movie, Joe.
Yeah, I just felt very disconnected throughout. And I think, you know, there's clearly a lot of intention behind it. I mean, you know, as you mentioned the pink opaque right now, I mean, clearly that's some kind of an allegory for it. And maybe that's, you know, maybe what they're trying to suggest there is, you know, their passion for that show was, you know, Rashmi, you and I were talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
yeah.
Right? You imagine being in a world where everyone loves Buffy the Vampire Slayer, yet you can't see it because of its sexiness, because of who you are. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something to that. But this is the problem. The movie itself is a pink opaque, right? I mean, it has these purple hues and pinks and purples like throughout. It's lit just like every A24 movie is.
Yeah. You know,
it's colored and lit a certain way. I mean, there's a whole YouTube video about how A24 movies are lit. And it's by design. It used to be by accident, but now it's kind of, you know, there's the A24 look that they deliberately dial into movies that they produce. Yeah, the whole thing was opaque. I'm going to wrap it up. I mean, yes. I really struggle to give it a score because I didn't connect with it enough to either love it or hate it.
Yeah.
And that's really frustrating, right? I should be telling people, go watch this, don't go watch this. I can't tell you either. I certainly can't recommend it. So for that, I'm just going to split the scale down the middle and give it a 5 because it's neither here nor there for me. I can't love it or hate it.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5 as well. Only because, like you, I didn't hate it. It didn't frustrate me. I just felt like I wasn't up to the challenge to this movie, whatever it was. And I think if anybody should want to see it based on what they have, you know, what others have told them, I would recommend read up a little bit, which I almost never tell for any movie. But in this case, read up a little bit about it. Read up what the director wants you to see in the movie, because I didn't see that. And maybe from the lens of knowing what this movie might be about, you might have a better experience. 5 out of 10, which based on my experiences, is fair.
4.
Okay.
Done. Okay. Let's move on.
Moving on then to Furiosa.
Okay.
A Mad Max saga.
Okay. So snatched from the green place of many mothers, young Furiosa falls into the hands of a great biker horde led by the warlord Dementus. Sweeping through the wasteland, they come across the Citadel, presided over by the immortal Joe. And as the two tyrants fight for dominance, Furiosa soon finds herself in a nonstop battle to make her way home. So this is directed by the great George Miller. This stars Anya Taylor-Joy as Furiosa, Chris Hemsworth, Tom Burke, Isla Brown, and a huge other cast who were in the first Mad Max movie. So, Yazdi, what did you think of this?
I pray at the Church of George Miller. I think every movie he makes now, I mean, he's in his 8th decade of his life. Every movie he makes, I think he's giving his everything. I think Fury Road was probably the top action movie of the last 100 years even. I love that movie so much. This is no Fury Road, okay? What it is good enough for me. I was like a kid in a candy shop with all the action scenes, but this is no Fury Road. Maybe the problem is with me because I expected something as life-changing, life-altering as an experience I had when I watched Fury Road. And we can talk more about it. I also have a hot take on the movie, which people will come after me, but I'm going to give my hot take later on. But Joe, do you think?
Okay, Rashmi, maybe you should get in between us here because I'm like, shut up, Yazdi. What are you talking about? This was fantastic. I mean, you know, I was talking about the critics' pick here, the critics' feedback that you have to give. You know, I was breathless at the end of this. I could only say one word. Like, what do you think of the movie? It was like magnificent. This is so we've had some great movies this year, right? Dune, we've had Challengers. This is like, for me, just a step above everything that I've seen in the last couple of years.
Better than Dune, Part 2?
It stomps all over Dune. Yeah, this movie worked so well for me. And I recognize that there's a particular brand of movie with which I kind of gets me giddy and butterflies and excitement. This is exactly that. This was tailor made for me. It's brilliant.
Joy made
for you. She had 30 lines, by the way. Yeah. Anya Taylor-Joy had 30 lines. She didn't show up for the first hour of the movie. It's unbelievable. I found Fury Road to be a flawed gem. People celebrated it. I didn't like it in the moment. I found it opaque. I found it difficult to understand. I didn't understand the language and the lore. And it wasn't until I got it home and watched it with subtitles that I kind of became a fan of that movie and what it is. And since then, I've rewatched it probably a dozen times. I could probably cite most of the scenes line for line. I just love Fury Road now. But at the time, I really struggled with it. This is so much more accessible. I think the storytelling is a lot better. It has the action sequences that made Fury Road such a breathless, fantastic experience. But it also slows the movie down at certain points to build character, to tell a really wonderful and very simple story. I mean, I'm not going to say this is greatness in terms of storytelling, but this was tailor-made for me. I freaking love this movie.
And you saw it twice.
And I saw it because Rashmi didn't get to see the press screening. So I volunteered to take one for the team and go see it again. But now you know why.
Yes. Okay. So I am the one who didn't enjoy Fury Road. I didn't love it at all. And then we watched it again close to when it came out on DVD, or, you know, when it came out. And then Joe made me watch it again this weekend before we went to see Furiosa. And I watched it again with subtitles. So I've watched it 3 times now. And I can't say I love it much more than originally. Like, it didn't do much more for me having watched it twice again, but I understood it a little bit more at least. Okay, so Furiosa, I really enjoyed this movie. This was a much more superior movie for me because, again, it felt like it had a more understandable narrative, right? I understood the motive behind the movie. I didn't feel like Fury Road had any motive. It's just like we're getting in a car and we're driving across the desert. And I didn't understand the Mad Max thing either when I watched Fury Road. This has nothing to do with Mad Max. This is a really good story about someone just trying to get home. And I love that. I thought Chris Hemsworth was delightful and funny, but it was very Thor-like. It was kind of Thor without some of the edges and the muscle. But I thought there were some really interesting touches about that character. And then this one was almost like a horror movie to me in terms of the gore around the killings and the faces of the people in this universe, and kind of it's a struggle to survive. But I at least understood the narrative, and I love the Furiosa character. So there was much, much more for me to hold on to here, and I really enjoyed it. And I think the production and the cinematography and the acting and the costume and the makeup were all phenomenal.
Go on, Yazdi.
So don't get me wrong. I mean, this is an 8 out of 10, I'm going to tell you. I mean, I'm going to recommend this to everyone. And like I said, I get giddy that George Miller makes another movie. I mean, I'm glad to be living at a time when George Miller... Because once George Miller is no more, who is going to make these movies?
Right.
These you know...
Visionary.
Visionary. Yeah. Bonkers. Unique. You know, yeah. Gonzo movies. I mean, nobody does, you know, nobody does like a thrill chase as good as
horror.
He does.
It's that horror element he manages to capture.
So don't get me wrong. Yeah. I mean, I think the sound design, the blissed out compositions, the sheer action daredevilry, the crisp cinematography of the action stunts, you know exactly who is doing what to. It's all here. And I think for me as a film buff, I lapped it all up with glee. But where the movie fell short for me is, you know, I see Fury Road as just one long chase scene.
Correct.
Right? That's so correct. There's a single-mindedness to it. That's it. This woman, Furiosa, wants to save these 5 virgins and get them away from Immortan Joe. And the whole movie is one long, you know, chase sequence. This one, by virtue of it being, you know, a prequel to how Furiosa came to be, it kind of meanders here and there, which is fine also. But here is my hot take on the movie. And please don't come after me. You both are going to come after me, I know. But I actually think Anya Taylor-Joy is miscast here. She is so slight, and not just physically, but even emotionally. I felt like she's no Charlize Theron. And my thing is, you're living at a time when Charlize Theron is doing one amazing movie after the other. Why are you hiring Anya Taylor-Joy? I mean, she looks like a wrist will crack if she picked up a brick.
That's true.
Don't get me wrong. Anya Taylor-Joy is great. I mean, I love her. Like, she can do, you know, horror. She can do period pieces. She can do, like, satire. She can do contemporary romances. But I actually think hardcore action may not be her thing. She doesn't even show up in the movie until after the 1 hour mark. And Miller very wisely chooses not to have her do like robust stunts, but all of her stunts are done by virtue of her slithering underneath a car or getting things. So I just could not believe this is the same character which goes on to become Furiosa. So that was one thing. And then the other thing also is, I'm going to say it again, please don't attack me, but I also thought that Chris Hemsworth was too slight, because there was so much buffoonery going on. There was a villainous
buffoonery.
That he doesn't become a very compellingly scary villain. And I think some other actors, like I'm thinking somebody like Jesse Plemons, would have shooed the life out of this and made this iconic, whereas this just becomes a hee hee ha ha villain for me. But again, make no mistake, I love this movie.
So I think, yeah, Joe, I'm not sure if you want to react.
I do.
So I, when we were watching Fury Road this weekend, before we went to watch Furiosa, I kept saying to Joe, gosh, Anya Taylor-Joy really does look like a younger version of Charlize Theron, right? She really does.
Before I watched the movie.
I'm not disagreeing wholeheartedly with you, Yazdi. I think she's adequate enough. I think she's good enough.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth staying for the montage at the end of the movie. So don't leave when the credits start, because it ties the two movies together very nicely, which I think is good.
Almost like directly.
Yeah, exactly. It sews it together, which is nice. I like the Chris Hemsworth. I think it made for a lighter movie when it's got so much horror component in it that it gives you a bit of breathing time when he's on screen, because he's unpredictable, right? He's kind of that crazy Joker-esque type character where you don't know which way it's going to go. And those are the scary demonic people to me, where you can't predict what's going to happen. I agree what you're saying, but I think if you cast someone more serious like a Jesse Plemons, then you're going in a very different direction. Then it just becomes more sinister and...
Dementis is by design inept.
Correct.
And so, you know...
Because if he wasn't, then it would be a different movie, I think.
He is a horrible leader. He is like the Ricky Gervais character in The Office.
Yes.
The way that he sees himself and the behaviors he has to perpetrate aren't there within his DNA. He carries the teddy bear.
Right.
Right. He has pain.
Right.
And so he's forced in some ways by this world to become what he becomes, and he hates that, right? And so you can see the ineptitude, because, you know, he becomes this leader, but he's not very good at it, and splinter groups keep breaking off, and he can't control anything,
right?
So I think the reason they cast somebody like Hemsworth there, because he's got that likable side to him, and I think for him to be this like super sinister.
No, I don't even want sinister. I just want somebody who's going to just chew this overcooked character and just like spit it out. He seemed a little tentative.
He brings levity to a lot of the moments, which is what Rashmi was saying. And I think, again, I'm going to defend it just because I've lost my objectivity. I like this movie so much that I don't care what you say about it. If you criticize its running time, I'm going to slap you. If you criticize its coloring, I'm going to criticize the
silly Ben-Hur chariot he's on. Why is he on the chariot?
That's funny. I thought that was hilarious.
Because... And this is the wonderful like inventiveness of George. Everything is automotive.
Yes.
There's two VW buses stuck together at one point driving around a quarry, you know, spitting fire. I mean, none of this stuff makes sense. If the world is dying, how on earth are we getting like all of this gasoline? Like,
gasoline.
None of it makes any sense other than you kind of have to accept that this is a primitive world that comes somehow from technology that we had when we killed the world, right? And so the whole war rigs, I mean, like, those scenes don't make any sense if you decide to examine them, right? The constant bombardments and attacks and, you know, like, wheels are blown up and yet these things still roll, right? Like, nothing really stands up to scrutiny other than you kind of have to accept that this is a universe he's built. And it's come from a singular vision.
Yeah.
It's the singularity of vision that brought us Fury Road that's just been taken further here.
I think what really scared me in this one, the horror element, was this almost underlying BDSM, sexualization, pedophilia. There's almost like a point in time where he kind of plays with these themes, right? There's the
he flies
even
very
worse.
Close to the sun, but he doesn't cross the line.
He doesn't cross the line, but it's always there. Like, there's a man who's like he's showing his nipples through his suit, and he's touching his nipples constantly, and you know, then there's like the obsession
and
with
that
a young
guy's name, by the way, is the People Eater.
Yeah, he's called the People Eater, right?
And
he's got like this disgusting
foot. And his
sons
are called Scrotus and Rectus.
Yeah,
like George Miller is having a laugh with us.
Yeah,
here,
yeah, he
right?
is.
He's
yeah,
not, he's not doing anything other than
it's like kind of
trying to push buttons.
Yeah, my buttons were very pushed, but I know Joe, you could probably talk about this one forever, but
I could. Yeah,
we're short of time, and yeah, I can start this one. I mean, shockingly, I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10. I really enjoyed this movie, and I think it made me appreciate Fury Road a little bit more, but I still can't get on board with Fury Road as much. Furiosa is good, though.
An 8 out of 10. Everybody should watch this. I'm actually very, very disappointed that this movie is not doing as well as they expected it to during Memorial Week. So people, go get your butts in the seats, because unless people show up and watch a grand or audacious, ambitious movie like this, you'll keep getting crap, right? So, because Hollywood will say nobody shows up for this.
I mean, I have to say there were only less than 10 people in the screening we watched yesterday, which was Sunday evening.
Movie numbers are down overall.
Correct.
This weekend.
But
so
people, if you care for good, exciting, thrilling, you know, cinema, go watch this movie in the theater. Don't watch this on a small TV screen.
It's not worth it. Yeah.
So go watch it. I had a problem with the casting. We can talk more about it some other time. But, you know, the movie also reveals how Furiosa, you know, lost her hair and how Furiosa lost her arm. And I'm like, oh, those should be more mythic than how you actually see
really?
It.
Oh, really? Why?
Yeah, I wanted it to be more mythic. But I'm setting all the character stuff aside. And, you know, my eyes were just like, you know, like in a glaze from the giddiness. And I, you know, my brain was fully fired. My eyes were fully fired.
Yeah.
8 out of 10, which is pretty
stingy. Okay, what's Joe going to give it? 9 out of 10?
Of course, 9.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen, you know, this movie has like almost an episodic nature to it, right? Mm-hmm. It's broken up into chapters, and the chapters in among themselves are kind of self-contained stories. In fact, I would quite happily have watched this as like a series of small movies. Like, you know, The Stowaway is just something, which is the third section of the movie, is just the most breathless action piece I've seen since.
Yeah,
Fury
it's
Road.
Great.
It's not for everyone, but it is absolutely for me. I'm not going to say to you, well, no, I mean, I think, look, it's a whole lot more accessible than Fury Road. And if you listen back to our Movie Wallers review of Fury Road, you'll hear me being quite critical. You'll hear me kind of saying, I liked it. There's something here, but I can't get it. But now I'm just a huge fan of this universe of Miller's movie making. This is perfection for me. This is a 10.
Wow.
Honestly, I don't know that I'm going to feel this way in a movie again this year. If it does, this is kind of like a Dark Knight moment for me. Oh. And I think I get that same kind of, this is what I love about cinema. The sound design, if nothing else, is absolutely eargasmic. Yeah. I mean, the engines and the...
Did you love it as much on the second viewing?
Yes, and that's why I'm so gushy right now, because it kind of validated my
initial experience
watching it for the first time. I thought, let's see if this works out, because it's long.
Yeah.
It's too long in some ways, but it worked even more effectively when I knew some of the moments that were coming. So, yeah, I love this movie.
Good for you.
Goodness me.
Yay.
There is, again, I don't want to be critical of the movie. There is an action scene in the middle of the movie on an oil rigger.
The stowaway,
which has to be seen to be believed.
Yeah.
And I wish somehow he had reconfigured the movie that's how the movie ended, because everything else pales in it.
Oh, no, I forgot to breathe during the stowaway part.
I couldn't breathe. And then, so honestly, George Miller for Best Director. Okay, it's about time we recognized him for the kind of stuff that he can do. I'm going to be the one championing him, and that he can bring the splendor of all of this in the seventh decade of his life, and he can still manifest something that is going to blister our collective minds, I think is pretty amazing. People should watch this movie. Come on, go see this film.
Yeah,
and I want to install a bommy knocker on my car. That's all I want.
What is that?
You don't remember the bommy knocker?
No.
The spinning round thing on the back of the war rig.
That was horrible, with the spikes.
And we have to talk a little bit. If just a final mention is the Praetorian Jack character, mm-hmm. who is at the heart
John
of
Burke,
the movie.
Yeah.
He's the one. He's the guy that drives the war rig.
I love that character.
What an amazing sequence and character. Just lovely stuff.
He's a non-mad Mad Max.
He was very good. I like that character.
He's kind of the heart of the movie.
Yeah,
he's like Mad Max without the wandering eyes, kind of crazy eye.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. Damn it. I wish this was a longer podcast. I had so much more to say, but let's wrap things up. So thank you again for listening. Check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/moviewallace. And we will be back in a few weeks, I guess, because I've got a little bit of a production gap due to me being away. Rashmi's going to be away, so we'll pick things up in the second half of June. Go to IFLA.
Yes.
In the meantime, Indian Film Festival, Los Angeles.
Yes.
Too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.